Welcome to Dr. Emmett Miller's Healing Times Radio, Conversations with Extraordinary People. This show can be heard on Dream Vision 7 Radio Network every Friday at 1 p.m. and 1 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, 10 a.m. and 10 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Go to dreamvision7radio.com, click Listen Live, and enjoy the show.
Today on Healing Times Radio, we will explore the concept of awakening the leader within at the level of the community with my special guest, Juanita Brown. Soon after I began to develop the concepts of mind-body medicine working with individuals in my medical practice, I discovered that there was a deep wisdom, an inner leader within each of us, and that by harnessing its power, we could produce truly remarkable feats of healing and optimal performance. From Virginia Satir, the creator of family therapy, I learned how to evoke and utilize this energy in the healing of dysfunctional family systems. The next step in understanding how to extend the concepts of holistic medicine I had developed into larger elements of system took place on, of all things, a dance floor. Now, I've always harbored a great love for women with brilliant minds, but never before had I met one who was such a great salsa dancer. And we began a dance back there in 1978 that continues even until today. One of the most creative strategic thinkers and organizers I have ever met, Dr. Brown is, among other things, an organizational consultant and a specialist in large system transformation. Founder of Whole Systems Associates, an international consortium of professionals who are dedicated to strategic inquiry and the renewal of complex systems, since 1974, she has served as a thinking partner, organizational strategist, and dialogue host with top leaders in business, industry, and community service organizations throughout the world. Juanita is also the co-originator of the World Cafe, a pioneering approach to large-scale dialogue and collaborative inquiry. In my book, Our Culture on the Couch, 7 Steps to Global Healing, Step 6, Expanding the Circle, is built around the principles of the World Cafe. Dr. Brown's award-winning book, The World Cafe, Shaping Our Futures Through Conversations That Matter, has already been translated into 10 languages. I can think of no better person in the world to explore how the indwelling power we all have can help us guide our communities and the world to the healing that we all need. And so, without further ado, let me welcome my good friend, Juanita Brown, to Healing Times Radio. Welcome, Juanita.
Hi, everyone, and hi, Em. It's amazing to realize that we've known each other for so many years, and for those who do not know, Emmett is a fantastic percussionist, as percussionist, and those dances were really great.
And we've had a chance to dance many times together.
Many times. That started a very long and wonderful friendship and collaboration professionally, and really a co-family relationship in terms of our families being friends over so many years. So it really, for me, Emmett, is a pleasure to be in this conversation with you and your listeners here.
Oh, wonderful. And especially why I think that your work is most appropriate to us at this point is that you really are a specialist in social movements and how social movements are born and how we bring forth the world through our conversations. So maybe we can start by going way back to your early work with the farm workers, and why don't you give us a little glimpse as to how you got started in your specialty?
Yeah, I'll be happy to share that, and also some of the insights along the way. You know, I was in my early 20s when I went to work with Cesar Chavez and the farm workers movement. For those of you who don't know Cesar Chavez, he was the Martin Luther King of the Mexican-American people in this country. And I began to work with him. My husband was doing his PhD on the farm workers movement. And I began to work as a community organizer with Cesar Chavez. I had come from a family that was very involved in social change. And in the farm workers movement, the basic unit of organizing was the neighborhood house meeting. People came together in their homes over beans and tortillas to talk about their lives. And they were talking about the if-onlys of their lives and the what-ifs of their lives. And when things got very exciting, people began to talk about the why not? Why not do this? Why not do that? Why not begin? Why not take a next step? And I actually thought that what would happen, actually, from the house meetings was that one organizer and others at the house meetings would then go out taking the key ideas from one house meeting to the next. And I always thought that the success of the farm workers movement was due to organizing. That's what I was trained as a community organizer. And I thought I was a great organizer, I have to be honest. I was a little arrogant at the time. But
you've gotten over that.
Totally. But, you know, through an odd series of circumstances, my life then took me to corporations as a corporate organizational strategist. And we were working, actually, on what we called the Corporate Community Project in one of these very large corporations to begin to think about how could the idea of community begin to bring new life into the organization as a community. And I was sharing the story of the house meetings with two of these very senior corporate execs, and they wouldn't let me rest on my explanation. They kept asking me, but what was it about those house meetings? Why did the house meetings work? Hmm. What was at the heart of those? And in that moment, suddenly it dawned on me that it wasn't the organizing that made the house meetings successful. It was the conversations themselves. And when those conversations were alive in those living rooms, then action, collective action, was a natural outgrowth. People couldn't help but act. And I've had a series of these ahas about the central role of conversation, both at the most intimate level of system, let's say within our families or within our neighborhoods, and at much larger scale. Emmett mentioned earlier, you mentioned that the World Cafe as an approach to large-scale dialogue was something that we had been intimately associated with. And in 1995, this way of hosting dialogue was born by accident in our living room. And in that instance, there were six little tables. And just by coincidence, we actually asked people in iterative rounds of conversation to leave one host at the table and to send others traveling to other tables, carrying the seed ideas from one table to the next, cross-pollinating and expanding these ripples of conversation out. And then it dawned on me, another big aha, was that the same pattern of iterating webs of conversation that had been seen and that I had seen in our living room was exactly the same pattern on a larger scale that had happened in the farm workers movement.
Mm-hmm.
And then I began to see that all other large-scale social movements, like the French Revolution, the salons, the Scandinavian study circle democracy, and even now the widespread of the internet, that pattern of increasingly large webs of conversation, bringing into being new things, was right at the heart of it. And yet the World Cafe seemed so simple. I mean, I was afraid, for example, to put Juanita at the World Cafe on my website address because I thought, well, what are people going to think? I'm some kind of a salon mistress? You know, I mean, I was a strategy advisor designing for critical business decisions. And I thought, oh, man, no one's going to believe this. And yet that idea really kept in my mind that there was something about what we had seen in our living room on those six tables, what we had seen in the farm workers movement and what I was seeing in the internet and other large-scale transformative happenings in the world that had something in common. You know, and then I had the real eureka, let's call it the eureka moment, mm-hmm. where I was, and you know both Fritjof Capra and Meg Wheatley well, Emmett. Mm-hmm. I was at a gathering of living, I was part of a faculty of a self-organizing systems a seminar with Fritjof Capra and Meg Wheatley. And Fritjof, who is a very serious physicist, European, was actually giving a lecture on the ideas of an evolutionary biologist by the name of Humberto Maturana, who's a Chilean, very worldwide renowned evolutionary biologist. And he put this slide up on the overhead that was by Maturana, and the quote was, "We bring forth our worlds through the networks of conversation in which we participate." And I suddenly began to weep as I read the next lines of what he said. He said, "We are the ones who make language and conversation our manner of living as human beings. We enjoy it. We caress each other in language. We can also hurt each other in language. We can open spaces or restrict them in conversations. This is central to us as human beings. And we shape our own path through the conversations in which we participate." And I was just stunned by that. I began to weep, and it dawned on me, what if underneath all these structures that we have, you know, the organizations and the corporations and the schools and, you know, these kind of boxes that we have made for mm-hmm. ourselves, what if it is networks of conversation and meaning-making that was actually the core process by which we create our realities together? And what if the World Cafe was just a small doorway to experience this deeper phenomenon at work on a smaller scale? And I think I may have come home after that gathering, Emmett, mm-hmm. and shared with you, you know, uh-huh. how amazed I was. Yeah. Because I remember yours and my conversations uh-huh. beginning after that around these ideas.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd love to hear from you kind of yeah. some of the thinking that, you know, that was triggered in you as we began to explore these things together.
Well, I think it one of the first things was to begin to appreciate the value of conversations. And how would you, when you say, how is a conversation different from a communication? How would you distinguish that word, conversation? What's a good conversation?
Well, if you look at the root meaning of the word, it means to turn together. And a communication, to me, has a unidirectional flow to it, whereas a conversation is a turning together in language and meaning-making, which has the potential to change both of us and to evolve us together into a different place than we were when we started.
Mm-hmm. What I think you brought to the world and to the field, it was by beginning to understand how important these conversations are, and that we're creating our reality and we're creating our world through those webs of conversation. Now we can think about how to do it consciously.
Yes, that's the exciting part.
And intentionally, and so the World Cafe, I kind of, in a way, see it as a training laboratory, because the things that you learn there about conversation and how to facilitate those kinds of conversations that want to grow, that want to disseminate themselves, those are things you can learn right there in the in the cafe. So why don't you go over a little bit with us what happens at those cafe tables when you have 4 to 6 people meeting at a table dealing with a question? What is it? What's the magic in the middle?
And you know those times in your life when you're in a conversation either with another individual or a small group and something suddenly shifts and you know that you've entered another real space of meaning with that other person or with that small group, and everyone is just totally present there, kind of hanging on each other's words and really learning with and from each other, no one knowing what's going to be the next thing that's going to be shared that will be exciting and interesting. Well, that's the intention of the architecture of a World Cafe dialogue. So imagine a group of people. It's very important that the group care about whatever it is that is going to be explored in the cafe. And imagine a room in which those tables of 4 or 5 people, small tables, actually set up as a cafe with red check tablecloths. Oftentimes that happens, and with a large piece of paper over the tablecloth, just like in a regular cafe, with crayons or markers on the table. And imagine a core question offered to the group, whether it's several tables or several hundred tables, because the World Cafe dialogues happen in groups from 12 to thousands. And imagine that you begin to explore that question. And it could be a question. We actually were in a dialogue last evening where it was a question about questions. And the question for the group was, what question is at the heart of your life right now, which if you were to really unfold a better understanding of it and responses to it, could help to make a huge difference or transform some aspect of your life? And we had people from all ages in this conversation, from they were in their early 20s to their late 80s, and it was so beautiful. As you began to see people sharing, everyone begins to notice what are the patterns and the themes and the deeper questions that are in the center of the table. And then after a period of 20 or 30 minutes, one host will stay at the table and the other three will travel to new conversations, carrying the ideas from those conversations into new ones. And if I'm a host, I will be receiving 3 new people and be sharing what happened at my table, and they will be linking and building ideas. So we could think about these iterations of conversation, think about it as a traveling dinner party of conversation, where then you might have a third round of conversation. And as the density of connections in the collective mind of the group begin to start sparking, all of a sudden you begin to see these network dynamics starting to happen and new insights popping up, things that nobody could ever have imagined. And people then begin to see patterns in what's happening at the tables. And they're having these, oh, I never thought of that before kind of ideas. And that's when you know that the magic is really starting to bubble. And as people come back together in a whole group to then reflect on what's in the center of our, let's call it the big table among all of us, and you begin to reflect and offer out into the collective group your insights and things that you have noticed or that you have really heard in the collective, it's very, very illuminating, and it can happen in a very short period of time, much shorter than many other group processes. And so we've been quite humbled by what's been happening with these World Cafe dialogues around the globe. You know, on the one hand with corporate, in the corporate sector, you know, global marketing strategy for Coca-Cola on the one hand, to, you know, village HIV/AIDS issues in Africa on the other, to the United Nations, to the European Commission, It's been very beautiful to see what's happened. And even Emmett, you've experienced and been a leader in World Cafe Dialogues in your own community. You might want to share something about that.
Well, I've been doing them locally, but also in pretty much whenever I teach a weekend-long course now, I always work the principles in because, you know, to me, it's very much like how life itself formed, where it was the coming together of molecules to produce a cell, the coming together of cells to produce a multicellular organism, the coming together of individuals to produce a family, and the families to produce tribes, and so forth. That there's a way of growing that takes place when I'm at a cafe table and I bring something to that, and everyone brings something, and that magic in the middle. It's almost as if there's a living being that's forming. Each of us brings a bit of our own life, and they join together to produce a kind of living idea that's young and tender, but it's there. And as we carry that to another table, it joins together with the other one. So just as, you know, just as I see the process of life growing, I see ideas coming to life in a cafe kind of setting. But I was wondering, could you share a couple of the kinds of questions that communities often ask themselves to begin of cafe meetings?
Well, one wonderful, I don't know how many of your listeners have heard of the discipline called appreciative inquiry, but the World Cafe way of working is deeply grounded in appreciative process. So in a community, you might be asking, starting with a question, something like, what are the times we have felt most alive in this community? Or what are the times we have felt proudest to be a part of this community? Another kind of question are, what possibilities do we see now that might not have been possible before? Mm-hmm. Even in a very difficult situation, mm-hmm. people are often able to see new possibilities. And so those are the kinds of questions that might begin a community process, or it could be very focused questions around some aspect of community life, like healthcare or education, you know, where we're really looking at, you know, what could a good school system also be? You know, like, what do we really need? We did one, for example, on education out in Point Reyes in California. And the core question for that one was, what would a wonderful education for our children look like? What would be included? And it was very beautiful to see that they weren't, that the people there, which included, by the way, students down to age 6 or 7, and adults and elders and school administrators and teachers, you know, how they together as a whole group, in Spanish and English, I might add, it was a bilingual meeting, began to look at some aspects of education and its relationship to the community and to the natural world that is the home for that particular school system out there. It's a rural area. It was very unexpected and beautiful to see what they came up with.
I think it's really wonderful how well it lends itself to intergenerational kinds of meetings and even multilingual kinds of meetings. So when we come back after the break, we'll explore a little bit more. But in the meanwhile, you can learn more about the World Cafe by going to theworldcafe.com. And we're back again here with Juanita Brown, the one of the co-developers of the World Cafe, specialist in large system change. And we've been talking about conversations and the webs of conversations that give rise to the world that we live in. And we're all pretty aware that the world we live in today offers quite a number of challenges. If we look back into very recent history, we see things like 9/11, the war in Iraq, the war in Afghanistan, the global financial collapse, the incredible corruption we see in politics and in business, the oil spill. And, you know, I've been trying to make the point that I think that all of these really come from some very, from a very similar source, maybe even one source for all of these difficulties, as different as they might look, and that we do have the possibility of changing this world that we live in. The problems of the world are man-made problems. It's not because some super bug has evolved or there's a new disease or an asteroid hits. It's not really an act of God. It's an act of humanity. And my belief is that we can make a change. And so as a large systems change specialist, let's take the rest of our time together today and talk about how could we go about each of us beginning to do something that might enable this world to change in a positive way?
Well, one thing that influenced me tremendously was reading a book by an architect by the name of Christopher Alexander. He wrote a book called The Timeless Way of Building. And it wasn't really about architecture of buildings as much as it was about the architecture of change. And what he shares that so influenced me, because I've in my youth, we talked about this earlier, was a community organizer. I was a child of the 60s. And I felt like if we didn't change the government, we would be goners, you know?
Yeah.
And that if we really didn't change things at the top, we would have no real leverage. And Christopher Alexander really influenced my way of thinking about this, because what he shares is that living systems are made up of wholes, that's wholeses, at every level of scale, from the individual to the family to organizations to towns to cities to whole societies to the planet. And he shared that life-enhancing shifts co-evolve not from grand plans or edicts from a central authority, but actually from small acts of collaboration based on the repetition of life-affirming patterns. So if we think of the World Cafe or of Conversations That Matter as a life-affirming pattern, that when those are repeated at every level of scale, that is what actually enables large system change.
Mm-hmm.
So he says, and this really touched me, he said, every act helps to repair some larger, older whole, but the repair not only patches it, it also modifies it, transforms it, sets it on the road to becoming something else, entirely new. And I think this is what, to me, if we look at millions and millions of these small transformations carried out locally, but locally everywhere, and now we have the systems of communication between local experiments, which are happening all over the globe right now. I mean, think about this. If you think about Paul Hawkins' Blessed Unrest, his book, Blessed Unrest, it has to do with the literally millions of non-governmental, local, grassroots organizations that have been springing up over the last decade or so. In a sense, it's like the planet's immune system, in a positive sense, creating life-affirming experiments all over the place are happening. Any place we now go in the world, there are kindreds doing things in their local communities. And maybe it's not as complex as we think it is. What if we were able to exercise our ability to respond to the call of our times in each of our local settings, knowing that other people are doing the same thing, just like the farm workers knew that their house meeting was not the only one happening, and that there were house meetings happening in towns all over the San Joaquin Valley. And therefore, by holding their own conversation and then connecting them to the others that were happening around similar interests, that was how large-scale change was made possible, whether it be through the electoral process or through very exciting things that, like the transition movement. The transition town movement is a great example of how this is happening. I mean, we have one, I'm right now in North Carolina, in the mountains of rural North Carolina, and there's a transition town movement right here, and another one in Asheville, which is 1 hour away from here, and they're happening now all over the world. Well, by participating in mine and helping to craft good conversations using the principles, in this instance, I might share some of the principles of the World Cafe that have to do not only with cafe dialogues, but with hosting really useful and meaningful conversations in any setting.
And we might say that you can look up transition towns on the web. It's a very fascinating movement, as we're talking about moving to sustainability at a local basis. So let's go on and talk about those principles. What are those principles?
They're quite simple, and we really didn't realize this until we began to do research on when the magic in the middle happened. What was it that allowed that to happen? So this is not a theoretical base. This comes from really talking with hundreds of hosts around the world. Principle one, set the context. Why are we doing this? What is the situation that makes this conversation important? Second, create hospitable space. Corporate conference rooms or barren settings are not really the best for a conversation. Imagine the difference that happens in a cafe or in a living room than happens in a conference room. So creating hospitable space with food, natural light, etc. The third principle is explore questions that matter. What is the question at the heart of this conversation, which, if we were able to shed light on it, could make a real difference? That's one of the most critical principles.
Okay, say that again.
Explore questions that matter.
And what is the question?
You would ask yourself in designing a conversation or planning for a conversation. You'd ask yourself, what is the question which, if explored, could make a big positive difference in our situation?
Great.
The fourth principle is encourage everyone's contribution. And Emmett, you talked about this in the first part of the show, where you said one of the great things was that everyone had a chance in these dialogues to offer their perspective into the center.
Yes.
Sometimes we'll use a talking piece from the Native American tradition, for example, where a talking stone or even a salt shaker or a pencil can be passed around so that each person has the chance to make their contribution and be heard before the conversation opens to the larger interchange. The fifth principle is cross-pollinate and connect diverse perspectives. And there are many ways to do this, not only the World Cafe way, but you'll want to ask yourself, how can we get multiple points of view on the question from people in the room, whether that it means bringing people with different lenses or different backgrounds? A deeper ecology of thought happens when you can cross-pollinate ideas, meaning moving ideas from one place to place, or moving people into different groups so that they can cross-pollinate, and also get many different perspectives. The sixth principle, there are only seven, is listen together for patterns, insights, and deeper questions. And this is very different than simply listening to each other. It's all of us listening into the center to see what we see there. So it's not only interpersonal listening, it's collective listening, all of us, to what's unfolding in our midst. And lastly, harvest and share collective discoveries. And there are, again, many, many ways of doing this, but it's important at the end of a conversation to give an opportunity for people to reflect on what they have learned and what have been their insights from the conversation, because that's where you get the gems from which exciting next steps reveal themselves. So those are the seven simple principles that, whether you use a cafe dialogue style or simply keep the principles in mind as you are in a local conversation with your PTA or you're designing, you know, for your organization or your school, those are principles to keep in mind.
Mm-hmm. Great. I've been talking a good deal about how the system that I often refer to as the matrix, that is that system that has been ruling our lives for quite a while now, it has a tendency to fragment us. It breaks up families and it breaks up communities, because as people become more and more isolated from their communities, they begin to feel more and more helpless and more needy. And the needier they are, the easier it is to sell them on your program, whether it is to buy your product or to vote for your particular candidate or to do whatever you want them to do. And, you know, what I see in this kind of conversational movement is really reversing that. It's teaching people about how to come together, how to relate with each other. And all the things that you talk about are precisely the ways that you would want to see a really healthy family working, the members of a really healthy family working with each other, or the members of a person's body working with each other, to where everyone is somehow able to add in and to add their piece in, and that the whole is bring something else into being, something that's more than simply the sum of its parts, that there is a collective intelligence or a collective wisdom, a collective creativity that can take place. Because to try to examine the system, let's say using dry science, it's far too complicated for anyone to understand the global situation we have out there. On the other hand, if we approach it in this way, we actually can make a change.
Well, I think that to me is the exciting thing about what's happened with the World Cafe community and other allied and kindred dialogue work around the world, is that people are finding that we do have the power together to bring people together in new ways. Well, I mean, for me, one of the most exciting things that's actually happening is really a movement among parents to do what's called parent cafes. It started in the suburbs in Illinois and now is spreading all over the country, the parent cafes. And these are in local schools across the country where parents are getting together. And instead of traditional PTA meetings, they, as parents, are saying, what can we do together as a community of parents who care about our children and this school? What can we do, both within our own families to make a difference, and what can we contribute to the school environment? And it's taken off like wildfire. Lena Kramer in Illinois is the person working on that. And I feel there are many signs of hope right now where these participatory ways of working are reaching both the grassroots level, and they're also being used more and more in the mainstream. You know, in places like the United Nations and the European Commission and other organizations of that type. So I feel actually in the midst of things getting worse and worse, that they're also getting better and better, and that we are all of us, you, me, our listeners, our families, our communities, that we're the ones we've been waiting for.
Yes, yes, indeed.
Well, because we can't leave it.
Yeah,
to the politicians. Yeah. It's obvious.
Yeah. Obama's not going to do it for us, and neither will Palin, right?
No, and they're, you know, whatever side of the spectrum anyone may be on, they're doing the best they know how.
Right.
But they need us to direct them in the directions that we feel are most important.
Wonderful. So I would want to invite everyone to take a look at the web. Go to theworldcafe.com. There's complete information about the World Cafe, stories that will, I think, inspire you, as well as you can download all the information that you need and a little kit which will help you create your own local gathering, either World Cafe or else just use the principles to put together what feels right to you.
I might also suggest that if you want help from other people, that you join the World Cafe online community at theworldcafecommunity.org. People will be of great support. They are to each other from all over the world in crafting conversations for their local situation. And also, there's a lot of information in the book, The World Cafe, Shaping Our Futures Through Conversations That Matter.
And that's, of course, written by Juanita Brown, who has been such a wonderful guest today. Thank you so much for being here, Juanita.
Thank you, Emmett. It has been a pleasure for over 30 years to be friends and colleagues.
Now let's apply a few of these principles at a deeper level. Take a few moments and allow your awareness to go within. Allow your body to relax. Allow your mind to be clear. Take a deep breath in, and as you let it out, imagine you're breathing out all unnecessary tension. And feel that little pause after you breathe out and before you breathe in again. And let yourself sink deeply into that pause, the quietest time of all for all your mind and body. Allow yourself to be in touch with the deepest part of yourself, that wise being within. And allow yourself to reflect upon these ideas that we've been exploring. How the transformation of social systems come about not by edict from above, but through small acts of collaboration, through life-affirming patterns of conversation. And think about what issue or situation do you, personally, at this moment, see as the most important to be addressed at the local level in your life, in your family, your community. What possibilities for good conversation can you visualize participating in, and with whom? What are the questions which, if explored, might lead to deeper understandings and enhanced possibility for transformation and healing? Take a few moments and just allow the creative part of your being and your wise inner guide to suggest to you some possibilities. And imagine yourself in conversation with others.
And imagine yourself being able to be centered within yourself. Open to share your truth. And open and receptive to listen to the truths of others, how others see the world. Good. You know, historians are fond of naming periods of time according to the most important inventions and tools of that era. As a result, we have the Age of Reason, the Age of Enlightenment, the Industrial Age, and so forth. Well, when historian John Galbraith was asked, "How will our era be known in the future?" he said it would be known as the time when the Buddha came to the West. The time when the Buddha came to the West. If he's correct, then perhaps this ever-expanding interest in Buddhism and Buddhist thinking, highlighted by the current popularity of the Dalai Lama, is a sign of this. And I think that the notion of the Buddha coming to the West is broader than could be expressed by simply identifying a particular philosophical or religious order. I think it's much larger than that, something that's happening in our Western culture. And it has to do with notions like that of empathy. There are even books such as The Empathic Civilization by Jeremy Rifkin, a fascinating man who's doing amazing work, and talks about the importance of empathy. And, of course, forgiveness and compassion. Dalai Lama, Thich Nhat Hanh, and others of that ilk seem to be the most popular teachers of this. And then there's a notion of egalitarianism. I think people have begun to look at the enormous discrepancies in our world, and even things like income discrepancy and this wide gulf between what some people are making and what other people are earning. And we're starting to question, is this really all right? Does this world basically belong to those people who have a lot of money, what they call the golden rule? He who has the gold makes the rules. Is that how it is? Is that how it's to be? Yes, it's been that way since time immemorial in most places. And even notions of love. All of these, I think, are happening simultaneously, burgeoning forth, spawning books, workshops, movies, TV shows, websites, and information on the healing power of these forms of love has never been so available. How personal, relational, and communal lives can be transformed. And I think the World Cafe is an excellent example of one of the incredible tools that become available to us. And I call all of these notions forms of love because, and I'm speaking of love with a capital L, which I define as more than just, let's say, erotic love or familial love or filial love, but all of those forces which cause us to be drawn toward each other or toward important principles, towards beauty, towards nature. I believe there's a built-in attraction, although our culture has done a great deal to try to fragment that attraction. It's still there. And so even when we do scientific experiments, the evidence shows clearly that when we feel these kinds of feelings, we are happier. And when we're happier, we're more productive in what we do. We can more easily ward off infectious disease. When we're feeling good, we're less than half as likely to have a repeat heart attack. Even seems to have an effect on dementia and Alzheimer's and whether or not we develop that. In spite of all of that evidence, in spite of what the wise ones have been telling us through time, we're definitely engaged in an epic struggle out there and in here. There's a personal struggle in each of us, and there's a collective struggle out there. And we may or we may not be aware of either or both of those struggles, but in fact, our planet is poised on the edge of an abyss. False leaders everywhere are conspiring with a machine-dominated information processing environment to lead us headlong over the cliff into a vast abyss of disintegration. Environmental pollution, global warming, economic globalization, war, terrorism, violence of all kinds, widespread despair, helplessness, hopelessness, the rise of ISIS, the rise of Ebola. We're standing right at the edge, and the choices that we make are going to be most important. And all together, you know, we're writing a story. We're writing a grand narrative. And it seems like our narrative has reached that tipping point, and soon we will be able to see those forces of domination, greed, and insensitivity that want to push us over the edge. Or, if a critical mass of us will adopt a new way of thinking, it can change. But I think it needs to be a pretty significant critical mass. If we're able to do that, we may be able to strike a balance between creativity and destruction, between separation and unification. We need to be different. Our individual selves, our families, our cultural differences, they're important. But at the same time, there's a deeper unification that we need to be aware of, to represent, to express. And although the denouement of our story is not yet clear, it is clear that the potential to go either way is there. And the good news is that we have the unique ability, due both to our new understandings about love and our new tools of communication, ranging from cell phones to the internet, social working, and on and on and on, we have the ability to actually take part in writing our own script. More and more of us are realizing that the change that needs to take place in the world around us, from our personal relationships to the actions of our nation, is exactly reflected by the change that needs to take place within each of us. Can you imagine that the peace and the wellness and the vitality and the creativity that we want to see in the world will emerge as we create it within? Imagine yourself and those in your immediate circle opening, creating a sense of peace within, of balance within, of being sensitive to violence, and to discover where we can melt that violence away with our heart. And imagine enough of us are imagining it at the same time that we develop the integrity to actually commit ourselves to the change we all say we want. We can definitely do it. I can imagine it. People everywhere are feeling called to come into the present moment, release those aspects of the past that no longer serve, nurture your inner wisdom and love, discover how to awaken what I call the leader within. When we do this, we're transforming our own lives and opening to the experience of shared values and meanings with others. Imagine each of us is like a neuron in this emerging global brain. And imagine our networked communities forming a basis from which collective intelligence and collective wisdom emerge and create a transformed world of peace and freedom and love. Now is the time each of us will get to choose. My vision is that we choose wisely. What can love lead you to imagine? So what if this is true? What if each of us really cultivating love within can really bring about a physical change outside? Imagine that that's true. And then you might ask yourself, how can I become an instrument of love? It's a question I've learned to ask myself again and again. How to cultivate it within until you are overflowing. And then imagine letting it flow out of you into the lives of those around you who are open to receive it, open because they've learned to trust you, have learned to feel safe around you, and they begin to receive it. Remember, as Anne Morrow Lindbergh told us, never think of love as something you can give like a giant armload of flowers. And some people try to give love like that. They dump it down on top of you, a useless, strong-scented burden. You can't give love. Love is actually that force within that enables you to give other things. Love is the motivating power, a power that enables you to give strength and power and freedom and peace to another person. Love is not the result of something. It's not a result. Love is a cause. Love is not a product. Love produces. It's a power like money, or like steam, or like electricity. Think about it. Love has value when you can give something else by means of it. The highest forms of inspiration tend to come from people who are experiencing love in some form. The top music, writing, dance, art, you name it. Inspiration involves the metaphoric breathing in of the spirit, inspiring. The arising of the quality of wholeness and relatedness within. That's inspiration. Pretty close to love, isn't it? And in the final analysis, love is the essence of, in my life, what is most useful, not only in my personal life, but in my teachings, in class, in the imagery that I do, when I'm working with people in therapy, or in any kind of healing situation, or in World Cafe meetings. I always strive to make love the guiding light in my dealings with my colleagues and co-workers. I'm a long way from being perfect, but I really sincerely invite others, please, to let me know when I'm not doing that, so I can take a look at my behavior. And if I find out that that's true, I'm really not living up to my own beliefs, my own values, oh, I really appreciate knowing it so I can grow. Because I believe that everything that I want to teach in its purest form is simply another symbolic representation of love. A vehicle designed to awaken the power of love in others. When the hand of utter stillness opens the heart, time ceases, and then love is possible.
And if you like, you can go ahead and collect a few of your kindreds together and explore using the principles of the World Cafe. Check online at theworldcafe.com. A couple of CDs that might be helpful in this regard are Awakening the Leader Within and Healing Our Planet, in addition to Our Culture on the Couch, which is my latest book. And that's it for today. So until next time, this is Dr. Emmett Miller reminding you, stay tuned.
You've been listening to Dr. Emmett Miller's Healing Times Radio, Conversations with Extraordinary People, on Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. For more information about Dr. Miller's work, upcoming events, new programs, and how you can change your mind and change your life. Visit his multimedia website at drmiller.com. That's drmiller.com. Conversations with Extraordinary People is produced in the drmiller.com studios. Special thanks to Jesse Churchill and Deborah Beauvais.